Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks so much for being with us. And from what I saw on Facebook, we've got a lot of people with us tonight, which is very exciting. And that's because of our guest, Andy Kagan, the author of a pretty incredible book, which I won't name right now because we're going to have a lot of fun. So we will be talking to Andy in a minute after tonight's metaphysical musing. And what I was thinking about, because the story that Annie tells is the story of a confirmation of there being an afterlife. And that's one of the basic questions that people ponder all the time. And there are some people that just poo-poo it and deny it and say it couldn't possibly be real for scientific reasons or whatever reasons they come up with. And then there are other people who are totally convinced but don't have an experience of it. And Annie's going to talk about her experience. But that desire to have a confirmation of an afterlife is what the whole paranormal world, all the people who are trying to contact ghosts and doing investigations and everything else, is all about: having some confirmation that life exists after death. And if you happen to be somebody who has develop their talent as a medium, for example, and I don't consider myself a medium, and my joke is I'm more like a large or an extra large. Not that I don't get messages from people who have died, but my job isn't to have that conversation. It's to help them cross over. Or if you're doing shamanic work, which is about being in the non-physical realm, communicating with not just the spirits of those who have died, but a whole wider range of intelligent beings, then you find out pretty quickly that there's really something going on here, because you get confirmation, you do something, and you see a result. But most people don't have that tangible experience, and belief is always hearsay. Belief is always somebody that you trust said something that seems credible, and a lot of people have said, yeah, that must be true because it seems credible and a guy we trust said it, and it gets passed around, but it's not because of your personal experience of it. And I always say that experience trumps belief. So even if you look at this from the science point of view, second law of thermodynamics says energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can only change form, which is very close to what Chief Seattle said when he said there is no death, there's only a change of worlds. The idea that everything is energy has been around for a long time, and it always surprises me how many people have never heard that. Einstein 100 years ago changed the whole way that science looked at everything by saying everything is energy and some of that energy is matter. So if you look at light, which everybody considered waves of energy, he discovered that it's not only waves of energy, it's also particles. It's solid stuff. It's matter. How could that possibly be? And we're at the point now where physicists tell us that approximately 3.3% of the universe is physical matter. And everything else is something that they can't measure. They can tell that it's there because of its effects and other stuff. They call it dark energy. They call it dark matter. But over 96% of everything is something that science doesn't have a way to measure or directly understand. I'm always surprised when they can't latch onto this idea that that's the energy that mystics have been talking about for thousands of years and describing and working with. So tonight we're going to have a conversation about a moment in time and a change in circumstances in which somebody suddenly had an experience of communication with that communication with a loved one who was no longer in physical form, someone who had died, and how that unfolded. And it's a wonderful story. I'm sorry that I didn't get the book soon enough to read the whole story, but I just love the book. So without further ado, that's tonight's Metaphysical Musing, and let's talk to Annie Kagan. You with us, Annie?
I'm right here, David.
Yeah. And your book is The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, How My Bad Boy Brother Proved There's Life After Death. And I love that he was a Jewish boy from Brooklyn.
He was definitely a Jewish boy from Brooklyn.
As another Jewish boy from Brooklyn.
Yes, he was a Jewish boy from Brooklyn.
And a Jewish bad boy, which was, you know, a whole other thing. There weren't all that many Jewish bad boys.
No, that's true. And when we were growing up, actually, Billy, the reason I call him my bad boy brother was, for as long as I could remember, Billy had problems with addiction. And mm-hmm. It was heroin addiction, actually. And that was not a very known or popular thing when he was growing up. It was very odd. I think people would drink, but there weren't very many drug addicts way back then.
Right. And it certainly was something that was marginalized and looked down upon. It was not the designer drug it became all these years later. But
yes,
what I'd like to do is start our story, you know, lead us down the path, which starts with you and who you are and how you wound up in that situation in which you wound up talking to Billy on the other side. So you started out in one place and went to another place. You've had a fascinating life.
Thank you. I've done a lot of different things, and what's really interesting to me was someone in the field recently told me, not recently, when the book first came out, someone who's worked with psychics and mediums, is that if you really look at my life, you can see how everything that I've done has kind of led me to the destiny of writing the book, because when I was very, very young, I started to write music when I was about 14. Mm-hmm. And music, I have learned, is practiced by the Sufis and different people as a spiritual practice.
Yes.
And that's because you're working with invisible energy. So right there is working with invisible energy. And then also I was a lyricist, so I had a very early love affair with words. I love mm-hmm. words. And then I became a chiropractor. And the kind of chiropractic I did a lot of cranial sacral therapy, mm-hmm. which was working with the energy of the cerebrospinal fluid. So that was energy again. And then it went back to music again. And then when I was a chiropractor after many years, I mean, it was funny. All my life, I wanted to learn to meditate. And I could never get anyone to teach me to meditate. Mm-hmm. Like my Sufi teachers, they were, no, your music is your meditation. You don't need formal meditation. And I never learned to meditate. And then after I became a doctor, after maybe about 5 or 6, maybe 7 years, I started to not feel very well. I started to, I would say, get a little depressed or sad from working with people who were in pain all the time. Mm-hmm. Not that they didn't get better, but people don't realize it's hard to go to work and be seeing people who are upset and uncomfortable. And I was always a very, very sensitive person. So I decided I had to learn to meditate. And lo and behold, as Billy would say, this very mysterious teacher appeared from the East, and I learned a very intense practice, and then the teacher disappeared, and I wound up meditating really 2 to 3 hours every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something I would never expect from myself. It really wasn't my lifestyle. I thought I'd meditate, you know, maybe 20 minutes a day. And strangely enough, although I had thought it was going to strengthen me and make it easier for me to work, what happened was I became really, really, really sensitive. And now when I went to work, it was even more difficult than it was before, and New York City started to become really unbearable, like way too much stimulation for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I, without really thinking about the consequences or what I was going to do, I decided to make a huge change in my life. I left my life, I sold my practice, and all I wanted to do was be alone, basically. I felt like I just need to be alone. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know really how I was going to make a living. I really had no idea. It was like jumping off a cliff. But I had enough to sell my practice and buy a small little house. And I thought maybe I would go back to music. I started to work with a very, very talented producer, really writing music again. And then my brother, Billy, showed up by telephone after having been missing for many, many years. And I was his lifeline, and after several years of trying to help him, because it was at this point, although he had been an addict on and off for most of his life, at the end of his life, and this was coming to the end of his life, he was really overcome by his addictions. He just could not defeat his addictions anymore. And
it sounds like he couldn't tolerate them either.
He was in a lot of pain. And no matter how hard he tried, no matter how hard I tried, he just couldn't defeat his demons. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And one night he was going to the hospital, and he made a scene in the hospital because he wanted to be admitted, but he didn't want to go to detox. And he ran out of the hospital and he got hit by a car and he died. And of course, I was completely distraught when they called me, because you always feel like you could have done something differently.
Something. Yeah.
You know, especially, I think one of the things about the book is that it talks about addiction in a different way. And when you have someone in the family who is addicted, you always feel guilty. It's just normal. And so I was completely bereft. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. And then 3 weeks after Billy died, it was my birthday, and I was just waking up, and I remember it was like a beautiful morning. The sun was pouring into the room, and all of a sudden, I hear my brother. I hear his voice really clearly. He had this very deep, beautiful, resonant voice, and I hear him going, "Annie, get up. It's me. It's Billy." And of course, I thought I was dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, "Oh, God, I must be dreaming, Billy, because, like, you're dead." And he's like, "No, no, it's really me. I want you to get up and get a notebook and write down what I'm seeing. So I did, and as I have the notebook in my hand, I'm realizing I'm not dreaming. I don't think I'm dreaming. I just walked across my floor. And then Billy, the first thing that he did, of course, was comfort me and tell me that there was nothing hard or cruel for him anymore, that he was floating through a beautiful, divine universe filled with light, and he wasn't sure if the light were the super thoughts of God, and where he was, the light had a personality like compassion and love and understanding. And then in his bad boy, charismatic, humorous way, he said, "You know what? Death isn't as serious as we all think it is so far. It's really enjoyable. In fact, it couldn't be better. So, you know, don't be too sad, and I promise you that we will meet again." So now the room is filled with light. Instead of being wrecked, I'm filled with this wonderful energy that came from the other side. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, I must be going crazy. I mean, somehow my grief is playing tricks on me. And I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure what happened. But I did feel so much better. I felt transformed. And that's how the story began.
And, you know, there are so many pieces of it that are very common for people that have their first experience of communication with the unseen, not necessarily a relative. You know people that have talked about this, and maybe it's possible, but now it's you. And in our culture, the first thing you think is, I'm hearing voices, I must be crazy. So that's a very ingrained idea. Which is, having worked nights at a psych hospital when I was apprenticing with two shamans, I can tell you the voices are real.
Right. And you know, there were so many different aspects, because it was so him. Mm-hmm. You know, the voice was so clear. It wasn't inside my head. As he traveled and as I journeyed with him through the different levels of the afterlife, his voice changed. But at first it was really clear and loud and distinct. And I felt him. And how could this be? And not only that, not only was I surprised that anybody would be talking to me from another level, but the fact that it was, you know, my mixed up, kind of crazy, drug addicted brother, who was now going to be kind of like my guardian and tell me all this wisdom, that was really also very hard for me to accept.
Yes, I understand. Well, and what you were experiencing in a lot of ways was telepathy, you know, wasn't the idea of channeling that a lot of people have. You were tuned directly into his thoughts.
Well, I don't even think it was telepathy. I think maybe it was more telepathy later, and it certainly wasn't channeling, because channeling, you know, it comes through you.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I heard his voice. It wasn't like I was reading his mind. It was different. He actually was able to somehow have his voice come through the ceiling. I didn't feel like he was reading my thoughts.
Yep.
But I didn't feel like I was reading his thoughts at all. And as a matter of fact, what was really funny was he was in charge, not me this time, because I was always in charge, even though I was the baby sister, because I was always the mature one, the good girl, and, you know, especially at the end of his life. Now, all of a sudden, he was in charge, and that was a switch.
Right.
So, yeah, it didn't feel like telepathy.
Well, it's however it was happening, you know, we can grapple with what the mechanism was. The various levels of information that he gave you are just absolutely fascinating. So I'm not even sure how we can delve into it. You probably have a better idea than I do. But the first thing was, at least the part of the book that I read, he was talking about life review and what that's like and what that looks like and feels like and what you learn from it.
Yes, I could talk a little bit about that. And I want to also say that what's unique about Billy's information is that it's not coming from someone who had a near-death experience.
Right.
I didn't die and come back to life. So I'm getting the information from someone who's on the other side. And not only is he on the other side, but what's really unique about this is that he lived his last life. So he's communicating as someone who's not coming back to Earth again.
Mm.
And that's very different. And I've had discussions with, you know, authors, some famous authors who've had near-death experiences. And they're saying when they did their life review, they can feel the pain of what they did to someone else or remorse. Billy describes it very differently.
Mm-hmm.
He describes it in almost a Buddhist way, where he's watching it on the screen, and he has a lot of distance from it. And it's really interesting, and he's looking through what he calls divine colored glasses. So where Billy is, what he's describing is there's total compassion and understanding. So he's not feeling a lot of remorse or regret. And he's just looking at all the different possibilities. That was also really fascinating, where he said he can see all the paths that he took and the paths that he didn't.
Right.
So in other words, he could see what it would have been like if he had married his first girlfriend and they had a family, or if he had gone to college, you know, and become an attorney, which is something he always wanted. And then it's really fascinating, because then at a certain point he says, but you know what? It started to not have a fascination for him anymore, because here he was in the middle of this glorious universe, and
right,
looking at the past really wasn't as exciting as being in the present moment.
Right. We're going to be taking a break in a minute, and I want to make sure people know where to find you online. So what's your website?
So the website is afterlifeofbillyfingers.com, and the Facebook page, where we have over 100,000 people, is also Afterlife of Billy Fingers, where we have all these pictures with his wisdom on them and lively conversation. So please visit Facebook. That's a really great place to start.
And I've had a wonderful time reposting those aphorisms, because they're gems.
They're gems. They really are.
They're just right on the money for whatever the particular thing is. So the book is The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, and I assume it's available everywhere in every format.
Every format, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the big bookstores, Hampton Roads is the publisher. You could always order it from a smaller bookstore that way.
Yep.
Too.
Okay, terrific. So we're going to take a break, and we will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. And that never gets old. I don't know why that never gets old. So we will come right back and continue our conversation with Annie Kagan. Don't go nowhere. We're going to continue on the Farkas Files here on Empower Radio.
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg. Ha ha, I win. Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities.
The bare necessities of healthy living are easier than you think.
You better believe it.
It all starts with the right balance of being active and eating well.
You eat ants?
You're gonna love the way they tickle.
And the food pyramid shows you the way. With just the right amount of exercise and the necessary grains, vegetables, fruits, milk, and meats and beans to keep you and your family on a path to good health.
Just the bare necessities of life.
Just remember, every food group every day.
Crazy.
Start by taking small steps. Steps that add up to a happier, healthier life. Try making half your grains whole. Or start adding fruit to breakfast.
Me and Baloo, we've got things to do.
So eat right.
Have a banana.
Be active.
I'll move. That's it.
And have lots of fun.
Yeah, man.
For your own path to a healthier you, visit mypyramid.gov.
Oh, man, this is really living.
This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ag Council.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over a million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Annie Kagan, author of The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. And what an incredible story. So I don't even know how to get all the nuggets from you in the time that we have. One of the pieces of the story that just amused me incredibly was the part where you sent the guy to go find him. And it just sounded so much like New York. I know this guy in the Bronx. And he could go to South America.
Yes, we had to actually organize a rescue mission to get, because when Billy showed up, he was in South America. And we had to organize a rescue mission to go get him because he was incapable of coming home on his own. And that was kind of like part of a really important lesson for me, because, you know, Billy would call me and he wanted to come home. He was in terrible shape. And everybody would tell me he could come home if he wanted to. He just has to get on. Right. Because I kept sending him money to, you know, come home. And he wouldn't come home. And I'm like, just get on a plane. He was driving me insane. And, you know, drug counselors would tell me I'm babying him and he could just come home. And the truth was, David, he couldn't come home.
He couldn't do it. Yeah.
No, he was too messed up. My friend had to take care of him on the plane. His passport had expired. There was so much juggling. I can't even tell you the rescue mission. I had somebody in Florida alerting the people in Venezuela. I mean, it was just insane. And it was really, really hard. So that was partly one of my first lessons in trusting myself. And I think that that's one of the things that Billy does for people is in the book, is that he empowers you to trust yourself. And, you know, I'm just me, but people who haven't read the book, it's a conversation between levels. It's like me here on Earth and Billy, you know, the bad boy angel. And and as he takes us through these amazing realms that he goes through in the afterlife, things that really most people have never heard of. I've never heard of any of them. He teaches us, and the thing that makes the book very successful, or the thing that people say to me, because I can't even tell you how many emails I get every day, mm-hmm. is that as they read the book, they go along with Billy into the realms, just like I did. Mm-hmm. So it's like taking a journey, and then he's teaching us as we go. He's teaching us about really how to have a better life. Like one of the emails that I loved, this woman said, you know, I never thought it would be a book about death that would teach me so much about life.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Billy has taught me is to see life through your own eyes. So everybody was telling me, oh, you know, he could come home, and he couldn't. And that was the beginning of my really trusting myself. Oh, I had a dream, right? I had a dream of my father, who was also on the other side, came and shook his head and like, you got to get Billy home, because he would have had a really bad fate otherwise. So we really need to empower ourselves. There's so many belief systems out there. There is religious belief systems, there's New Age belief systems, there's our parents' belief system. And Billy says, you know, you need to sort through your beliefs and throw out the ones that don't really serve you.
Right.
So that's right. a really valuable lesson. Yes.
Which is very, very hard for lots of people, because that's... you've got stuff that you've been carrying around and running your life from forever. And then you look at it and go, no, wait a minute. But then who am I if I don't have this belief?
It's true. But then Billy does it in such a funny way, like with me. Mm-hmm. You know, there are certain things that aren't in the book. I'll tell you a little story that he told me that's not in the book. He calls it the magic. I think it was the magic archway. Billy had to really persuade me to write this book, because I really did not want to make it public. My mm-hmm. spiritual life is very private. I'm a very private person. I haven't even gone anywhere to speak That's how private I am. I've been invited many places, but I don't go. I'm very private. And so, you know, he had these different ways of coaxing me into writing the book. One of those was to change my viewpoint about things. So he told me, he would tell me these fables. So he told me this story about a woman, and she was studying these magic symbols, and she would study in the morning and she would study at night. And then one day she came to this magic archway, and on the other side of the archway was her dead brother. And he said to her, "There is no one truth." And when you realize there is no one truth, then you grow up. And it's like, wow, because, you know, if you see the stones from this angle, it looks this way. If you see them at night, it looks differently. It's always fluid and it's always changing. And if mm-hmm. you realize that there's so little that's absolutely true, then you could pick your own belief, the one that serves you and makes your life better.
One of the things that I fuss over all the time is so much of what we're told is not true.
Right.
Partly because people believe things that they've never examined, and they just pass it down, and partly because there are people who are trying to manipulate everybody and who lie intentionally. And people are distracted and busy and doing what they've always done, and, you know, they just keep telling the same story over and over again because it's the story that we, whoever the group is, have always told.
Yeah.
And there isn't discernment. There isn't a point at which they stop and say, well, is this true and does it serve me?
Yeah, and that has a lot to do with the word authority.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all think that there are authorities out there that know a lot more than we do. And the truth is, maybe not. And a lot of the authorities, like you say, they may have their own reasons for things. And I think it's almost a scary place to begin to mm-hmm. say, wait a minute, I'm not going to listen to anybody. I'm going to be my own authority. And I'm going to figure it out for myself, even though we've been taught all along that we can't do that. We're not capable. But we are capable. And I think Billy did that pretty much his whole life. He was God, he really saw things his own way. And even though the way his life ended was very tragic, Billy had a wonderful life. And he was very well loved. And he loved people and he helped people. And he just enjoyed nature. And he was really, really, really close to God, or the divine, or whatever you want to call it. And he led me to proof of that in the book. So Billy, you know, he was rich, he was poor, he lived a very, very, very full life. And he was his own authority. And I think that that's one of the things from the other side he tries to tell us, is to see life through your own eyes.
And he has a wonderful way of expressing that. What would you say some of the other key teachings, if teachings is the right word, you know, what are the lessons he's trying to tell us?
Well, one of the things that I think he says that really affects people, and it's not going to be the same when I say it, but I'll do my best, is that he's able to talk about and put you in touch with how magnificent you really are, how expansive and colorful and wise your soul really is. And at the same time, we're squeezed kind of into this human condition of of limitation also. And so, you know, how do you live on Earth with the limiting conditions here and still, I think what he says is at one point is like, you know, see through the dramas, see through the roles into the universe that you really are the sun and the moon and the stars. And so being able to have both of those perspectives at the same time is very healing because, you know, some theories or, you know, they teach you that you're all expansive and that you could have anything and do anything. Well, I have to be honest, that's really not my experience on Earth.
Right.
Because, you know, I'm me and the Earth is filled with other people. And other circumstances.
Yeah, they're such a nuisance sometimes.
Right. You know, I am not the only thing that exists here. So, you know, so we're limitless and limited at the same time. And for me, he helps me kind of make peace between that circumstance of having this longing for our greatness and at the same time, you know, living the human experience and accepting and enjoying that experience as well, and not feeling like when you go through something really difficult that you're being punished, that it's a punishment.
Right.
And that actually, when I'm going through something really hard, he'll say to me, okay, so, you know, you're learning calculus right now. You're not doing simple math. And so many people thank me, like people who, let's say, I hear from a lot of people who have illnesses, right? Because one of the themes of the day is that, you know, anybody could just heal themselves and illness is maybe negative thinking and, you know, maybe not. I mean, I was a doctor and all kinds of people were sick and all kinds of people were well.
Right.
And, I think that really helps us. Okay. For me, and many letters I get, it's like, oh, guess what? We can't understand everything with our minds of why things are the way they are. Life is a little bit of a divine mystery. And so live it and live it fully. And don't think you have to understand everything because you can't. And so that's a big relief.
Yeah, there's a wonderful meme that gets posted all the time which says, nothing is under control, so relax.
Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody tries to, you know, think their way out of everything or, you know, if I do step 1 through 7, guess what? Maybe not.
Right. Right. Yeah, the thing I say all the time is the only straight lines are made by human beings. There are no straight lines in nature. Everything curls back on itself and curves and connects to other things. And so we set out with a plan, you know, usually a straight line. I'm going to do this, and this and get this result. And it goes completely haywire and you have all these side adventures and everything else is happening. And people are surprised and upset. Like, well,
people are surprised and upset. And,
you know, that's just how it is. It always is that way.
It is because that's the nature of life on Earth. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a mystery. And one of the ways that Billy helps is that you could see it any way you want. That's where your freedom is. You can't always control the circumstance, but you could control the way you see it.
Right.
And it's not always supposed to be sunny. It's not always supposed to be a perfect summer picnic. It's spice and sugar and pepper and all different kind of things.
Right. It's about learning to dance in the rain.
There you go. Exactly.
Yeah. So we've got a few more minutes, but this hour is disappearing rapidly. This is such a wonderful conversation. What else would Billy want us to tell people?
I think it's important to realize that your loved ones still exist, that they're on the other side of a curtain, that the love doesn't go away, that you can reach out to them, that you could feel them, that my circumstance with Billy is really a destiny thing, and that just because we have this kind of communication doesn't mean that the love is greater or more special, because certainly Billy and I have had enormous conflict in our life. And the most important message, I think, is that we do go on, which means that you won't lose the love. And it also means that ultimately you are an eternal being.
Yes.
And that, you know, you're a spiritual being, and that we're here for a certain amount of time, and we're here to evolve. I mean, that's what we're doing here. We're evolving. We're changing, and change isn't always comfortable, but everything changes. And so that helps you let go just a little bit more. And if you realize that ultimately your destiny is light, because what he says is that the destiny of everything is we're all moving towards the light. And the light isn't just light, but the light is divine light, which is so much better than anything you could ever imagine. Like he says, if you took all the galaxies in the universe and put them in a line, the distance between the first and the last, that's how much better. God is even better than that, mm-hmm. than what you could imagine. The best thing you could ever imagine, the real nature of the divine, is greater than the distance between those galaxies. That's how incredible it is. So that's pretty comforting.
Hey, it's good over here.
It's good over here. And it's good down there.
Right. And you'll be here when you get here. So we'll be waiting.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me, with few exceptions. If you study a lot of the old traditions, they all basically say that. You know, some of the Western tradition took a side trip into sin and control. But, you know, almost all the indigenous cultures, that's exactly the message.
Yes,
and the message is the ancestors are still with us, and the ancestors are here to help us, and that we're all one. We're doing this together. You just happen to be here now.
Yes, Joseph Campbell talks a lot about that, and he talks about the fact that the afterlife is in every culture from the beginning of time, and the ancestors are the ones who communicated that. And the reason why in our culture it's kind of frowned upon, the history was explained to me, was because if you have a direct spiritual experience, if you have direct experience through your ancestors, then you really don't need a middleman.
That's right.
Right? You don't need to go to someone else to feel the love and the light, and therefore, you know, there's less control over you. So they started to call people witches. They started to put people in. One of the first psychics and mediums, George Anderson, they tried to put him into mental institution. They would really scare people.
I was floored recently when I learned what the meaning of the word heresy is.
Oh, share it, would you, David?
Absolutely. Choice.
Wow.
A heretic is one who chooses, who does not follow orthodoxy, which means straight. You're not following with everybody else. You're making another choice, and making a choice is bad.
Right. Making a choice is bad because then I guess you don't need a lot of things if you have your own direction. And I think that that's one of the main things we're doing here is finding our freedom and not being, so influenced because, I love this, Billy delicious way. And he has many different life reviews, actually. I think he reviews his life in four different ways. One is a book, one is a melody. He says, you know what? When you're reviewing your life after you die, he said, there's so much influence from others while you're on earth that in a way you don't even get to live your own life, but you get to live your own life after you die.
Interesting way to look at it.
Yeah.
Well, we're running out of time, which is ridiculous because we have so much more to talk about.
It did go very quickly.
Right, which maybe we can do at some point, which would be delightful.
Sure.
So my guest tonight is Annie Kagan, author of The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. Thank you so much for being with us. And the website and the Facebook place for people to look is also The Afterlife of Billy Fingers.
Correct. No B, just Afterlife of Billy Fingers.
Afterlifeofbillyfingers.com, and on Facebook, look for Afterlife of Billy Fingers. So good to meet you. So good to hear more about this adventure that you've been on. And I know everybody was sitting waiting with bated breath to hear the story. It's been a wonderful, wonderful thing to share. So thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you, David, for having me.
Pleasure. And if anybody got curious about what in the world David does, you can go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding on the contact tab is every technology for getting in touch with me, including an online calendar to make a phone appointment with me. I do a free 20-minute assessment of what's going on with a person, a place, a situation, whatever it happens to be, and we can see whether my work can be helpful to you. If you want to know more about the show, that's hiding at thefarkasfiles.com. The whole archive for however many years we've been doing this, because I've lost track, is there. This show will be on there. I'll post the link in a couple of places, but you can always find all the shows at thefarkasfiles.com and also on iPods, iTunes podcasts, and several of the streaming talk show internet radio streams. So wherever you find us, I'm happy that so many people are listening. We had a wonderful large audience tonight, and I know more people listen all over the world whenever they can get to the show, and that's sure makes me happy. It's wonderful to know that people are getting so much out of the show. So until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. On Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.